Podcast audience, movie lovers, and monster fans, welcome to the main event in the red, all the way from Skull Island, weighing in at 88,733 tons, the eighth wonder of the world, Kong! And in the blue corner, joining us all the way from Japan, weighing a massive 99,634 tons, the king of the monsters, some call him Gojira, we know him as Godzilla! Let's get ready to rumble! That's right, folks. To coincide with the release of Godzilla X Kong, the New Empire, today we're going to be looking at its immediate predecessor, 2021's Godzilla vs. Kong. I am your regular host and, I guess, announcer this week. I'm Mike Wilson, back with a regular Silver Screen podcast for the first time in a while. We've been keeping you tided over with cinema classics and cult classics, but here we are with a regular one. And I can't do it on my own. As always, I'm joined by my faithful co-host, GK.
Hello there. I will be this episode's Godzuki.
And we are joined by a couple of guests who you may recognize from other places to help us referee this this monster titan brawl. First of all, you may recognize him from our very recent Ghostbusters cult classic episode. Please welcome back Michael Whaley. Michael.
Hi. How's it going? Glad to be back.
Yeah, not bad. Yeah, always up for a good bit of monster action. So, yeah.
Of course.
Cool to have you back. And you may have heard his dulcet tones on our Star Trek podcast very recently. That was the first time he's guested, but now he's here for a Silver Screen podcast. Please welcome back, Dag.
Hey, it's great to be back again. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thanks for coming back. And as I say, we're all now here, presumably all big monster fans. And so, just to fill the audience in, this is, like I said, the first regular Silver Screen you've probably had in a while. I think our last one was Spider-Man No Way Home. But it is also the start of a three-part crossover that's going to be going on through the year, a monster crossover that will encompass all three of the Silver Screen brands. So this is the Silver Screen original recipe, as it were, the original podcast, where we're looking at Godzilla vs. Kong to coincide with the new film. Later in the year, Cult Classics, to coincide with the 70th anniversary of the big guy, we'll be looking at the original Gojira, or Godzilla, from, I think, 1954. Isn't that right, DK?
That is, yeah.
Yeah, and cinema classics for no particular reason, except, I guess, his 91st year. We'll be looking at the original King Kong from 1933 later in the year as well. So, yeah, we're looking at them both together this episode and then separately at different times. So look out for those and look for the monster crossover sticker banner that I've made to kind of see when that's coming up. So with that out of the way then, I do have a few questions. So before we dive into the Hollow Earth, I'm going to try and set the mood with everyone, if that's all right. Just before we get into the big review, because this is the first MonsterVerse film that we're actually reviewing of this combined MonsterVerse. And so I wanted to ask everybody, I'll go around in a sort of circle and ask, are you up to date with the MonsterVerse, first of all, and are you a fan? And Michael, we'll come to you first because I'm going clockwise.
Yes, I'm caught up on all of them. I am a big fan. I love the MonsterVerse. They're just fun popcorn movies, and I really enjoy that.
Cool, fair enough. And how about you, Dag?
I am a lesser fan, but growing. In recent years, I've made some friends who are really into Godzilla and other kaiju films, and so. But this would actually probably be the third Godzilla movie I've ever seen, so I'm way behind, and I missed the middle one, so I had to catch up on with the wiki notes.
Because you can't really see this without watching King of the Monsters. Unfortunately, it's very much a sequel, but we'll get into that when we get to the BTS, and that's fair enough. DK, I probably have asked you this at some point, but are you up to date with the MonsterVerse?
I'm up to date with the movies. I've not managed to sit down and watch the Monarch TV show as yet.
It's good.
It's very good, yeah. You've seen it all then, Michael?
Yeah, cool. I have. Yeah, Monarch was great.
I really liked it, yeah. So that's at least two of us have seen it.
I'd even say it's better than some of the movies because it did like Godzilla Minus One does, and it's more about the people and how everything affects them and not just, hey, let's have a fight.
Yeah, but plenty of monsters and stuff in there as well.
Yeah, great, great.
Stuff in there, yeah. Yeah, fantastic ending as well. Cool cliffhanger. And, you know, at the end of the day, Kurt Russell. What more can you want?
And his son, and Wyatt yeah. Russell.
And his son, yeah, exactly. Yeah, I've got to say, the lead actors, even though they're kind of not hugely famous, with the exception of the Kurt and Wyatt Russell, are much better in Monarch Legacy of Monsters than most of the lead actors in the movies.
Like, I agree,
Alexander Skarsgård in Godzilla vs. Kong just made no impact whatsoever on me. Like, I had to write down who was actually the lead in that one. But anyway, we'll get to that later, I'm sure. Right, fair enough. So, are you a fan then? We'll come to you first again, Michael. Are you a fan of Godzilla and King Kong and sort of kaiju monster movies generally?
Yeah, I am. It took a little while. Like, I remember seeing the 1939 King Kong when I was a kid, and I was like, oh, this is fun. It's cool. I mean, I felt bad for King Kong in there, like, you know. But yeah, but I didn't. I took a gap. I mean, I watched the Matthew Broderick Godzilla, and I mean, I watched them as they came out. But I didn't go back and watch all the old ones of any of the Godzilla stuff until more recently, and I've seen some of them now.
Yeah, but they're really hard to find in the UK.
They're not even, but I have some friends that are big kaiju fans, like Dag was saying, and it was like, okay, I need to go more and look into this more because it's a cultural phenomenon. So
that's fair enough. That's cool. And so do you have a favorite Godzilla movie and a favorite Kong movie?
Ooh. I mean, it's not in this universe, but my favorite Godzilla movie is Godzilla Minus One.
Cool. Yeah. No, I just meant generally. I didn't mean specific to the Monsterverse. Yeah. Any Godzilla one.
Yeah, Godzilla Minus One. And I really liked Kong Skull Island. It's fun. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't know. It's hard to say what my favorite is. It's up there. I think it might be. It's just the cast is great. There's a lot of people I love in there. And it was a good movie.
Yeah, it was. And I will second that Godzilla Minus One is just fantastic. Really good. Beautiful. I can't wait for the physical release of them. Yeah. Cool. So, Dag, same questions to you. Are you a fan generally of Godzilla, King Kong, or monster movies? And do you have a favorite Godzilla and Kong movie?
I would say I'm a burgeoning fan. You know, Pacific Rim was really my introduction to kaiju. And, you know, I'd be like, well, I did like Power Rangers a whole lot, so I'm into giant robots destroying
legends.
So, but I never
get along.
I've never really dived into MonsterVerse movies like this until just the last few months. So that's where I am. And if I were to pick my favorite Godzilla movie, I'd say I've only seen three, so I don't have a strong enough sample size to make a good evaluation there.
Okay. And how about King Kong? Have you seen all of his movies, and do you have a favorite?
I have only seen Skull Island.
Okay. Wow, you've never even seen the original, like, 30s King Kong?
Well, I think everybody's seen that. Like, everybody took a film class, and that was, like, essential for any kind of animation. But, yeah, I mean, if we're going to count Kong and then Godzilla, I'm at five films then. 1933, okay, yeah. 2014, 2017...
Oh, I count them all. I mean, King Kong was remade three times, and I'm counting it three times, you know, 33,
you know,
76, or whatever it was.
And I did Peter see Jackson's. The Jack Black one, now that you talk about it.
Well, there you go.
Yeah.
They're all good in different ways. Different movies, I think, in a lot of ways. But
very much.
I'm a huge King Kong fan. So, DK, you know the question. So, yeah, same question to you. Fan of monster movies, Godzilla, Kong, and favorite ones of each?
Yeah, been a fan of them as long as I can remember.
I already knew this, but you know, the audience might not.
Yeah, well, if they don't know what kind of person I am now after like 2 years going on occult classics, then there's something wrong with them. Been a big fan of Kong since I saw the original one when I was, I must have been four or five. And absolutely loved it. Been a fan ever since. Only recently saw Son of Kong, though, and I absolutely adore that. It gets some slating, but I do like that one.
I haven't seen it, and I was looking it up the other day because I think it's the only kind of Kong movie that I haven't seen. I've even seen like the Japanese King Kong versus Godzilla and everything. And so, yeah, I looked it up, and I didn't know it existed, and now I really want to watch it. So, yeah,
it's all right. It's not a classic. It's not on the level of the original, obviously, but it's really
no,
well
but it's
done.
Only like, what, 68 minutes long or something anyway?
Yeah, yeah, and it's a very different beast, if you pardon the pun. Godzilla-wise, yeah, who doesn't love a Godzilla movie? Yeah, I think my favourite one, it's going to be Destroy All Monsters.
Yes, good call.
Yeah, I love crossovers.
Yep. In fairness, you haven't seen Godzilla Minus One yet, though.
I haven't, no.
Yeah, cool. Yeah, Destroy All Monsters is definitely up there for me as well, just because it's that shit. You've got to love it. And did you give your favourite Kong movie, or is it actually Son of Kong?
No, my favourite Kong movie is the original. Although I do have... Yeah. You know, I'm not sure who mentioned it. I also like, I do like Skull Island as well.
Yeah. Like I say, I find it hard to pick. If I had to pick, I would probably go with the original King Kong and Godzilla Minus One as my two favourites, but I love any movie that involves these guys, really. So, yeah. Well, almost any, you know, some are better than others, but you just kind of have to, it's one of those fandoms where you take the rough with the smooth, I guess, isn't it? Particularly the Godzilla movies where it just... tone just veers wildly between absolutely ridiculous Saturday morning cartoon and deep introspective look at, you know, Japan and the war. Yeah.
When you have them using episodes on MST3K, you know they've hit gold.
Fair enough. And yeah, last question for everyone then. Are we all excited for Godzilla X Kong, the New Empire?
Definitely.
Michael, yeah, for sure.
100%. Cool.
Anything we're looking forward to seeing in particular, or have we all avoided spoilers and just going into it clean?
I'm going into it spoilers.
Clean. I'm trying to avoid them as much as possible.
Yeah. Yeah, toy list. We were talking about this, DK. Toy licenses and things don't help because, trailers and particular figures.
Thanks for that email, Funko.
Yeah. Like I say, it was Amazon in my case, and then I was just like, all right, whatever.
Well, normally with movies, I love trailers, and I will do that, but like, I know what I'm getting, so I don't necessarily need to watch a trailer for this. Like, I know the world, I know it's going to be, I mean, there's nothing that's going to surprise me in there unless, you know, somebody super famous who isn't supposed to be in that world. Like, they've got, Anthony Hopkins is playing Kong in this one. And it's just like, that would be the only thing that would be.
Dude, he was in Transformers The Last Night. Anything is possible at this point.
It is, no. But I mean, him actually playing Kong is a little bit different. All full Andy Serkis. We see behind the scenes of him doing mocap. But yeah, no, like, I'm steer clear of what the story actually is. I see, bits of a trailer here and there, like on an advertisement, but I haven't watched it. So, but I know what I'm getting.
I don't think it's going to be a particularly in-depth story, is it? It's going to be Godzilla, Kong, monsters fighting.
Exactly.
You know, you're getting
I have to say is that as fortunate as I have been to inhabit places on the internet that don't feature spoilers for pretty much any content I'm interested in. If Godzilla and Kong doesn't play Whoomp There It Is by Tag Team, I'm gonna be disappointed. It's the greatest tag team of all time, and you can't play one song. Come on.
I wouldn't put it past them. We'll have to wait and see. I've got my tickets already pre-booked to go and see it on opening day because, you know, I love anything like this. I'm sure even the ones I don't particularly love, I'll still go and see just for the fun time of it, as you said, just fun popcorn flick. If nothing else, so
for sure.
Cool. Right. Well, with that out of the way, then I'm going to move us into the behind the scenes section. We only have a little bit because I've got other bits and pieces dotted around. But if you're a regular Silver Screen original listener, you know that the BTS usually falls under the remit of my co-host. So DK, it's over to you for some monkey and lizard facts.
Yeah, no worries. This film, obviously, it's a sequel to Godzilla 2014, 2017's Kong Skull Island, and 2019's Godzilla King of the Monsters. It is the fourth film in the MonsterVerse. It's also the 36th film in the Godzilla franchise, the 12th film in the King Kong franchise, and the fourth Godzilla film to be completely produced by an American film studio. Around 2015, Legendary announced plans to create a shared cinematic franchise centered around Monarch that brings together Godzilla and King Kong in an ecosystem of other giant super species, both classic and new. Producer Alex Garcia confirmed that the film would not be a remake of King Kong vs. Godzilla, stating the idea is not to remake that movie. Executive producer Jay Ashenfelter found the project to be challenging due to Godzilla King of the Monsters. He stated, "It was also such a humongous monster ballet that the question became, what can we do to top that?" Now, in May 2017, Adam Wingard was announced as a director for Godzilla vs. Kong. Wingard had previously been considered by Peter Jackson to direct a sequel to his 2005 version of King Kong that went unproduced. Wingard was offered the project by Mary Perrin, stating, "I jumped at it immediately. Doing both characters in one film and being the filmmaker who gets to answer the age-old question of who would win, I couldn't resist." Wingard emphasised his intent for audiences to invest emotionally in the monsters as characters and his goal for the battle to have a definitive victor. Now, Wingard prepared by watching every Godzilla and King Kong film before receiving a script. He had already pictured the final battle taking place in a synthwave-style futuristic city backdrop. He chose this due to being a fan of electronic video game music and 1980s film scores. He stated, "My vision basically started there. How can we get these two monsters fighting on a synthwave album cover?" Wingard confirmed that the film would tie in with Godzilla, King of the Monsters, and be set in more modern times, feature a more rugged, a bit more aged Kong. He cited the 1976 remake of King Kong and Godzilla vs. Destroyer as touchstones for evoking empathy in the film. Godzilla vs. Mothra, Godzilla vs. Destroyer, and Shin Godzilla served as inspiration for the monster's scale.
Yeah, as in size, not the literal scales of the lizard. Yeah. So, yeah. Yeah, that's fair enough. So that's all you have for the BTS for now then, yeah, DK?
It is for now, yeah, but I've got a little something later when we get to the sound.
Yeah, that's fair enough. Awesome. Before we jump into talking about the random things that we usually do, like writing, direction, VFX, and whatever, that we all just hit at random, I do like to always kind of ask, what is the first time that you saw this movie, and what was your kind of initial spoiler-free first impressions of it, if you can either remember or, obviously that's a lot easier if you've just watched it. So, Michael, I'll come to you again. Can you remember the first time you watched it and what you initially thought of it?
Because it released in 2021, I don't think I saw it at the theater. I think I did wait for it to come onto like Max or something like that. So I saw it at home. I remember my first thoughts on it, where I was like, oh, this is just a fun, like I know what we're getting, there's going to be a bad fight. And I really like, how they did that, both times. And then the final, but that's what I thought I was getting when I saw it. So my first impressions were, it was just a very, very fun. I think we did make popcorn at home because we weren't in the theater. So and had popcorn for this popcorn movie is really my first thoughts on it. We're just like, oh, this is very, very fun.
Yeah, fair enough. That makes sense. And Dag, I have a feeling you might have just watched this. So what are your initial thoughts with that in mind?
So I've seen this movie twice now. The second time was last night. The first time was Wednesday.
Okay.
And my initial thoughts is that this is the most unexpected Avengers movie. Hulk loses a fight to the Lizard and goes to the Savage Land to find Stormbreaker, but then they team up to find Tony Stark's Ultron possessed Hulkbuster.
Yeah, I didn't quite think of it in those terms, but I suppose it's, yeah, you could definitely move some things to make that fit for sure.
But all comedy aside, it's super entertaining. I have thoughts about the production design, the acting, the plot when we get to those points.
We will in the
show, but yeah, super entertaining.
I was going to say real fast this morning while I was thinking back on watching it last night again, I had that exact same. I was like, oh, this is a superhero movie. This is 100%, 100% just a couple heroes or anti-heroes even that we like fighting it out for, the common good and don't really care about destruction or human life. So that's funny that you said that.
If you haven't seen the trailer for Godzilla X Kong, it seems like it's basically, you think this is a superhero movie? That is just basically like, let's just get ridiculous. Why not? Yeah.
Can't wait for Kong to get the Infinity Gauntlet.
I mean, basically, yes.
Exactly. 100%.
Yeah. What about you, DK? Can you remember the first time you saw it and what were your impressions?
I think we were still kind of under pandemic restrictions here, so I didn't see it at the theater. I think we rented it on Amazon, I believe, when it came out on digital, I believe, bought it on Saturday for our family movie night. All sat around and watched it, and then the day after, just because we got it for another few hours, we watched it again. So, and it's very seldom that we do that, but like everybody says, it's just fun.
Yeah, that's fair enough. I'm much the same. Like, this didn't actually get a cinema release in the UK because we were still under pandemic restrictions. So I had to watch it in much the same way as you. I think I rented it in very poor SD for as cheap as I could, just so I could watch it off of some site, either Amazon or Google or whatever. And yeah, I had fun with it. I really enjoyed it. I was gutted not to be able to see it at the cinema because I'd seen all of the other MonsterVerse films, and I was one of the rare people that really loved King of the Monsters and was hyped for it and just had real fun with that at the cinema. So I was kind of annoyed that this was one we didn't get a chance to. But it was, along with, I think, the Mortal Kombat remake, it was one of a couple that I was like, I really like this, even though I didn't get to see it at the cinema. I wish I could have, but I'm planning on buying it when I get, you know, when it comes to available on physical media, which I did. And so having watched it recently for this, like a few days ago, pleasantly surprised how much better it looks when you've actually got it on Blu-ray in, you know, decent quality, as opposed to whatever, you know, crap streaming copy somebody had given me, you know, some service was using anyway. So yeah, I was like, wow, this visually is a lot cooler than even I had thought. And, you know, that's basically what I came in for, was more the visuals than the plot, because I mean, I use the word plot very generously.
Yeah, very generously.
Yeah. So yeah, I was much the same. I really, like I said, I don't think there's a Godzilla or Kong movie that I dislike. Even, you know, stuff like 98's Godzilla, I can watch as a guilty pleasure. It's terrible, but yeah, I could still enjoy it in its own way. You know,
Ferris Bueller's Hank Other Azari. Day Off.
Yeah.
Yeah. But see, I saw that at the cinema, and it was just fun. Just, you know, big monsters, why not?
I did too. I saw it at the theater in 98 as well.
Wow. I'm going to jump into the little bit about the writing and plot, because I do have a little bit of information to pass on, just first of all, to give us a bit of context. So I will say that Michael Dougherty, who directed Godzilla King of the Monsters, was one of the people who provided rewrites for this film to ensure that certain themes from King of the Monsters were carried over. I mean, okay, and that some characters were properly developed. He failed, but okay. Dougherty revealed how he wrote for the title characters and how the film would address their differing interactions with people. For Kong, Dougherty stated the film would feature, quote, those very unique and even warm bonding moments between Kong and humans, since they've been a staple of the character since the original 1933 film. For Godzilla, his connection to humans would be more implied, as his softer side is rarely shown. Eric Pearson and Max Borenstein contributed in streamlining the story. Pearson recalled an unused concept where drunks with shotguns attempt to kill a woolly mammoth thing, only to get crushed. The sequence was intended to allude to the folly of mankind's attempts to challenge the Titans. I want to see that. It's a shame I've never got filmed. Director Wingard became very involved in developing the world building behind the Hollow Earth plotline. Again, generous use. He described the split narrative as a voyage through time and an exploration of the past and future, noting how Madison, Josh, and Bernie uncover tech that should not exist, while the others uncover the origins of the Titans and humanity in the Hollow Earth. Wingard noted that similarities between Madison and Bernie and how their mission created a Goonies-esque adventure, stating it was a nice seasoning so we didn't get bogged down in a single tone. Might be why I dislike it, because I don't like Goonies either. This film, this film does feature Mecha Godzilla, as we've alluded to. He was originally written into Godzilla King of the Monsters, but co-writer and director Dougherty scrapped the character during development, which again, probably for the best, considering we already had four monsters in that film. Mm-hmm. Introducing a giant robot on top of that might have been overkill. If such a thing's possible. So yeah, just that's kind of all I have on the writing of the movie and bits and pieces about that. So I'm going to jump in and ask our thoughts, just in general. So first of all, do you have any general thoughts on the writing of the movie that you wanted to bring up? And Michael, why not? We'll start with you.
I did think that while the movie is very fun, we've already alluded to many times, there was quite a few plot holes and like, why are they doing that? this doesn't make a ton of sense.
Yeah.
You know, or just like, hey, you have to throw this in here. Like the studio's like, you have to throw this in there so we can set up for seven other movies. And like if that was the case, that'd be great. Like we know it's not the writers and directors, but you know, just yeah. it's like I said, that's what turns it from like a great movie to a good movie that's a popcorn fun movie is the writing's not strong. They're just trying to put out a product. And like, I get it. Like, and I don't see anything wrong with that. I mean, it's entertaining. But yeah, there's quite a few problems with the writing that, you know.
Yeah, sure. I didn't really notice any kind of very egregious setup for other movies, because I remember when I first saw this, I thought, oh, well, that's the end of the MonsterVerse. It's the conclusion point.
To me, they were like going to the Hollow Earth in general.
Yeah.
I mean, I know there was a power source, but like that was, they're trying to, you know, they're trying to give Kong more backstory and a place where they can go for the next movie, which is what looks like they're doing from the limited trailers I've seen.
Yeah, definitely.
You know, it was just like we could do this and we can have 8 more movies out of it, which, I mean, it's Godzilla. You can always have more movies, or Kong, you can always have more movies, but they just like, I don't know. It just felt shoehorned a little bit and just like, why are they doing this? Like, you know,
yeah, I did kind of find that to be the case when they got to the Hollow Earth, that it was basically, it was, you know, let's create a monster that'll make a cool toy and it can appear on screen for like 4 seconds and that's that. And you look on the internet and they've all got names and they're all like actual things. And I'm like, it's got no screen time. And yet there's reams of information about these like crazy war bat creatures and this like dog thing that was appearing for like a second. And like
the crab really thing. Just, like,
you know, yeah, the spider
for just a second. I felt that was very Star Wars-esque when, you know, showing a planet. You know, showing a small, like, oh, that looks creature. Oh, there's a creature to eat it, you know, sort of.
Yeah.
Always exactly. A bigger fish.
Always a bigger fish, yes.
Yeah. So I see where you're coming from, but yeah. So what about you, Dagos? Any initial kind of thoughts on the writing of the film?
Despite the fact that there are more plot holes than entries into Hollow Earth, honestly, I feel like you could have replaced all of the dialogue with the way Charlie Brown hears his parents, and it still would have made an equal amount of sense.
Oh yeah, you can watch it on mute and miss very little.
yeah. Kong has this friend. She's a little girl. She makes she speaks to him in sign. That's great. That's all you need to know, because that directs every action Kong takes. Who cares what the rest of the people are here doing? And oh, by the way, did you know Kong can throw a tree like a football? That's insane.
Why not? Indeed. No, I will say I kind of like that. I love the kind of the plot between Gia and Kong, because like, kind of as I alluded to in the stuff I was mentioning there, it's always been a staple of Kong that he's not really a monster and he can bond with humans. And I do think Kaylee Hottle, the little sort of deaf actress that plays Gia, probably the best actual actor in the movie, who's not like a CGI monster. It's like, you know, not a lot of competition, admittedly, in the movie, but I still, you know, she was the one I felt the most kind of for and the most about. And I do love that kind of bonding. I think there's some really cool touching moments between her and Kong, like the touching fingers and when she's kind of the only one sticking up for him and like trying to exploit him and stuff. I'm kind of here for that kind of thing a lot more than I am for whatever the heck comedy knockabout the kid from bloody Hunt for the Stranger World of People and 11 from Stranger Things are doing over there with bloody, what do you call it? It's like, this is just, every time they cut to this plot line, it's just killing the film dead.
Yeah.
But you didn't need it. You could introduce Mechagodzilla without having to have them discover it in some cool way. It's like, just the battle's going to take place in Tokyo or whatever anyway, so
all you needed to do there. Was... All you needed to do was get a guy in a green suit and a cool fluted dagger to just play the fluted dagger, and voila, Mechagodzilla out of the water.
Yes. Oh, man. Dag, you are my new best friend. Just felt like, yeah, that was just misjudged. And even like, Millie Bobby Brown's a pretty good actress, and I didn't hate her in King of the Monsters, but here it was just like, what are we doing? And I mentioned this on social media because somebody was bringing up one of their most annoying tropes in movies is when they have descriptive text saying where you are and it's completely unnecessary. And I was like, this was one of the worst examples, because they go to the Apex Cybernetics facility and get into whatever this weird tube thing is, and it's like, this thing's going to Hong Kong. We're going to Hong Kong. Oh, no. They arrive in Hong Kong. They have a whole other bit of information. This is, you know, you see the signs. This is the Hong Kong branch. We're in Hong Kong. And the scene cuts away to, you know, the Hollow Earth again for another few minutes. They cut back and great big letters appear on screen saying, Hong Kong. And I'm just screaming at the TV. Yeah, no shit. We pretty much established that point, you know.
Yeah, it was probably there to just, you know, remind the Americans, like, we don't know where stuff is, you know, geographically disinclined.
I mean, once you've heard the name of the place like six times and you're going back to the same characters, though, it's not like it would be hard to work out where you are.
Yeah, but we have a character named King Kong, and is Hong Kong his cousin or his brother? I don't know.
I would laugh, but chances are, yeah, you're probably right. Actually, there's almost certainly somebody in the audience going like, who's Hong Kong?
It's just this older brother. He's a little bit bigger, but more experienced.
And don't even get me started on Hong Kong Fooey. That's a whole new...
Oh my gosh. Wow. Hanna-Barbera in the house.
Cool. So yeah, what about you then, DK? Any sort of initial thoughts on the writing before I get a little deeper?
Yeah, I mean, no one comes into these expecting Shakespeare, do they? But it's... even so, it has the same problems that you get with a Transformers movie. Nobody's there to watch the human characters. Nobody
it's
cares.
It's better
about
than a Transformers dialogue. Movie with a couple
that's,
of exceptions.
Mate, that's a low bar. But exactly. Yeah, I put these on and I expect the same kind of intricacy and, you know, plotting that you see in your average Fast and the Furious movie. It's a visual spectacle, and I take it as that. Just give me the big monsters slugging it out and I'm happy.
Yeah, we knew what we came for, so that's fair enough. Well, the best way to break this down, I think, is probably going to be to sort of do it by rounds of fighting, maybe, because I've identified sort of, I think, four or five, depending on how you look at it and where you come in at this. And the first one isn't really like a fight, it's more of a preamble. And it surprised me because the film dives straight in with a Godzilla attack. And obviously we learn he's attacking Apex Cybernetics because they are experimenting with Ghidorah's brain. In a Mecha Godzilla's coming online or whatever, so he's feeling challenged. So yeah, how did you guys feel about that kind of initial Godzilla attack? Other than, like I said, I was initially shocked that it just dived straight into it, especially after, I mean, 2014 Godzilla, we sat for about an hour and a half before you even saw any monster action. So yeah, who wants to jump in on that one?
Yeah, it is like sometimes, I mean, it was King of the Monsters and then this. It's like they kind of they looked at Gareth Edwards' film and thought, yeah, we're doing away with the tension, we're doing away with keeping off screen. Let's just go for it, and yeah, this is what we got.
Yeah, I kind of like that attack, I'll be honest. I mean, yeah. I should say we actually see Kong first of all to establish that he's on the kind of Skull Island, and it's now basically Skull Island Cabin in the Woods, you know. And he's trying to bust out of this like containment thing, and so you see him, but he doesn't really do much fighting. And then, like I said, I was quite surprised that, like, huh, Godzilla's attack is pretty nifty at the start, you know, which I didn't even remember after having watched the film once. Maybe I was just still, you know, getting my seat together and grabbing some popcorn the first time I watched it. Yeah, I kind of liked it. Yeah, any other thoughts from anyone on that one?
I think they jumped into it super quick. Like, the first 3 minutes of the movie, Kong has discovered he's in a habitat and he's angry about it. And then, there's a Godzilla thing, and that just blipped by. Like, you're not the only one who feels like they missed that one. I saw it twice in the last week, and I'm like, right, that still happened. and then there's, you know, the meeting with the guy who talks about Hollow Earth. It's like, I need you to lead the mission. It's like, all right, cool. And then he is on Skull Island talking to the woman from Iron Man 3.
Rebecca Hall. Yeah. I don't know the character's name. I didn't write it down, but yeah, Rebecca Hall. She's in the new one as well, but whatever.
and she's there and they're talking, and then Kong looks at them, and then suddenly he's passed out on a ship and they're in the middle of the ocean. I'm like, I want to know what that movie was from the time it took them to say, hey, we're going to take this big ape into the middle of the ocean. And oh, by the way, we know like Godzilla's hunting him. So let's just take him to Godzilla's hunting grounds in like 5
seconds.
Well,
then they did say
time.
They were avoiding Godzilla's traditional hunting grounds. It's just that, you know, he found them anyway. But we'll get to that. That's the actual first proper fight.
Yeah, they spent 10 minutes setting up probably like 3 weeks of plot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean,
I would say...
I can't blame
I would say that, like, it went real, like, you know, the attack was real fast, and I felt like they were just, like, they're like, oh, we're hiding him here because there can't be two alphas. And then it cuts away to Godzilla, you know, attacking to try to imply like, oh, he thinks there's another alpha here. And honestly, if you look at your phone for half a second during that, like, and I luckily had seen it already, but last night I did, I was like, wait, is he attacking where Kong is right this second? Because that's what it seemed like for half a second. I missed the giant titles of where they were on the screen.
Yeah, it's not just that. I mean, they try to play Mechagodzilla like it's some fantastic like mystery for them to reveal later, and I think that's a bit of a misstep because I get it now having watched the film, but I'm sure the initial time I watched it, I was like, why does he think there's another alpha there? But then watching it now, I see that, you know, there's a big red eye that's lit up, and it's obviously, you know, the initial test of Mechagodzilla that's alerted him to, ooh, I don't want this thing challenging me or whatever. So,
yeah,
for sure. But like, you know, they just said there can't be two alphas, otherwise they'll fight. And then it just cuts them attacking. Yeah. I'm like, oh, is this where, like, it almost was half a second. I had to remember, oh, wait, no, I remember what's happening now. But, you know, I could see that even being like, they were just like, we have to get these things done because we have to have them fight seven times. And
that's what we came for.
It is the title of the movie. I get it. Like, that's...
Yeah, I mean, yeah, we'll get to that, like I said, a little bit later. But it's weird that you mentioned that, Dad, because I never gave that any thought. And now I'm just thinking, like, they make such a big deal out of, like, how cumbersome and how large Kong's gotten. And even when, you know, they can't go anywhere, it's like, well, how's Kong with heights, blah, blah, blah. And so, like, how the heck did they manage to get him tranquilized, docile enough, and then lifted onto, you know, an aircraft carrier boat and then just off out to sea? There's only so much Gia can presumably pacify him with. Like, just lie down, please. Okay, now shuffle along.
Well, and the same thing. How'd they get him into the helicopter hammock?
Well.
I have an answer to that. I think the hammock part was underneath him on the ship, and you just couldn't see it. But I work in logistics for my day job, and 100%, none of this would be cheap or easy to do in any kind of fast time.
You got to have... Like, because those helicopters have to be flying in formation to be able to maintain him, and he has to not move. Because if he distributes that weight any other way, it's all going down.
And yeah,
I remember when I first watched this, I remember thinking that I was like, how in the world is this huge, you know, 80,000-pound ape not just sinking that ship? They're having him stand on it like it's just, oh, that's just another crew member. I'm like, well, it would just be on the bottom of the sea at this point, wouldn't it?
And then him and Godzilla are standing on the aircraft carrier, and it's like, guys?
Yeah, and you've got a feel for the U.S. military, because Godzilla took out, like, what, three helicopters and another two or three, you know.
$40 billion worth of tech and...
Yeah.
The thing was,
if
like, when I
wants to challenge the U.S., they've got no military left at this point.
Yeah, not at all. My first thing too was when I saw them all there, I was like, has it been 3 weeks? Because that's minimum how long that would have taken to arrange all of that.
Yeah,
like has it been 3 weeks? They're like, we have to get him now, and just like, it's already been 3 weeks because of all the stuff that had to be arranged.
Exactly. I'll mention this later, but I can tell from at least some of the credits that there were a lot of deleted scenes for that exposition.
Oh yeah. I didn't put it in this section, but Adam Wingard said there's a possibility if he had all of the raw footage, he could have released like a 3 or 4 hour movie. But he's got no interest in making a director's cut. He doesn't want any of that footage out there because he's happy with the movie that he made. And, you know, for better or worse, this is what it is. And I'm just like,
he's not Scorsese.
What else was there? Exactly.
Release the extended cut.
He's like the anti-Snyder.
Yeah,
the
anti-Snyder, anti-Scorsese.
Yeah. If it was Zack Snyder, there'd be a third version. By now, we'd be up to...
It'd be all in black and white.
Black and white, yeah, that's what I was about to say.
Four hours of it would be in slow-mo.
Yeah.
It'd be all in black and white, yeah. We get the slow-mo, and then at the end, we'd realize that Godzilla had accidentally carved a Superman logo into Kong's chest.
Yeah. But also, the CGI to remove Godzilla's mustache won't be great.
100%.
Yeah. They would have wiped out entire continents on purpose just to teach the other a lesson, because that's what heroes do in Snyder's world.
And I forget, don't forget, Kong's mom's name was Martha Kong, so.
We are going places that I'm here for.
Was that his dad? Yeah, well, fair enough. So, yeah, I mean, we've kind of dealt with that. The only thing I can really say about the introduction to the human characters is just how bland and forgetful Alexander Skarsgård is. Not to mention, I mean, by this point, we've already introduced him. We've introduced Demian Bashir, I think, the actor who plays the villain of the piece, who's completely superfluous to requirements.
I called him Dark Tony Stark.
Tony Dark, as the case may be. But yeah, I mean, he just seemed completely redundant. And then you've even got, I think somebody on Letterboxd said this, that they took them a couple of watches before they realized that the Japanese dude that hangs out with him is meant to be the son of Ken Watanabe's character, Ren Sarazawa, who is, of course, a reference to the original Godzilla. And I'm like, oh, yeah, that's just dropped in, you know, oh, this is Mr. Sarazawa, and you're left to connect those dots yourself. Nobody's interested in doing that for you. But, yeah, so there anyway. My biggest issue with this film, and I've already told DK about this without getting too heavily into spoilers, is having now seen Monarch after this film, it seems like a hefty retcon that they go to Skarsgård and he's like, getting to the Hollow Earth is absolutely impossible. It would take way more power and effort than we could possibly imagine. And then in Monarch Legacy of Monsters, it's like a trip down the shops. Everyone and their dogs meet at the Hollow Earth.
Well, that's when they have the portals that are created by the monster. The Titans can get there. They have an easier way than doing a giant hole through the Earth.
Well, they end up, I'll bring it up now because why not, they end up doing that anyway because it's like going to the Hollow Earth is going to be impossible and we've got a whole change in gravity and whatever, and then when they need Kong and Godzilla to fight, it's just like, nah, we're just going to burrow a tunnel with Godzilla's atomic breath and Kong's going to jump out of it and it's fine, we're all good. Hang on.
Well, it's a magic tunnel. It's a magic tunnel that Godzilla created because he's a type.
Yeah, that was one of those main plot holes that I was like, what?
Who's completely underused in this film is Lance Reddick.
Yeah,
I know. Yeah. One scene and like four words or something.
Right, yeah. And that's where I'm like, there has to be so much on the cutting room floor, especially now that he's passed. It's entirely terrible that they've underused his character in that film.
Yeah. While we're on the subject of the human characters, though, I thought the same thing about Kyle Chandler. Like, I know he was in Godzilla King of the Monsters, but I hope he enjoyed the paycheck that he got for that less than one day of filming he must have done. He's just completely meaningless in the film. Not only is he the worst dad ever, like, he gets a call from his, what, like, 12-year-old daughter, like, I'm in Hong Kong. All right, cool.
No, it was just about a yelling that was like, where, huh? It was like he couldn't hear. It was...
Yeah. But yeah, and I mean, aside from that, I'm like, Kyle Chandler is a better actor than Alexander Skarsgård. Why in the world have we went with Skarsgård as the lead for this movie? And you've got Kyle Chandler right there. But, yeah, anyway, like I said, I hope he got paid well for it. right, so yeah, moving on to the obviously the actual, what I've got is round one, Battle at Sea, the first big fight that we all came for, you know, ignoring the logical issues, shall we say. What did you guys think of that very first Battle at Sea between Godzilla and Kong?
It made sense based on the lore that they had established in this film. As someone who had to get the Cliff's Notes on the previous film to discover that some of Godzilla's buffs were given to him in the last film. The whole like being able to sense the other alphas and then just the power-ups and stuff. I think for a, you know, if this was WWF wrestling, it was a great cage match, so to speak, because they're stranded on this, you know, one ship and, you know, in the middle of the ocean. But despite all of the breaking all of the laws of the conservation of physics, I thought it was a justified fight. Like, Godzilla's hunting Kong, that was established. Oh, here he is. Okay, that's great. I think my favorite part of the whole thing is the oh shit moment when Godzilla gets kicked off the aircraft carrier and Kong pounds the deck. And then you just see it light up underwater. And Kong, like, I swear, Kong breaks the fourth wall, looks at the camera and goes, oh shit. And then leaps off of it as this just
slow motion superhero jumping away from the
laser beam shoots up into the sky. I'm really worried about, like, intergalactically, the path of that laser beam. What's it going to hit? How many satellites did it just disrupt in orbit? Is Elon Musk out all of his Starlink investment? You know, just very curious how they're maintaining communications with all this atmospheric disruption.
Oh, it's cheesy, but I kind of love that moment just because it's cool. And there's a lot of moments in here that I love. Like I said, you've kind of got to switch your brain off, but the initial like right hook that Kong smacks on Godzilla, because I'm like, yeah, exactly. It's not a very sort of fair fight when you think this lizard thing with the tiny T-Rex arms versus, you know, a giant gorilla with the ability to just knock him out effectively. But, you know, I mean, I did realize quickly, you know, this, you know, lizard thing with no particularly long arms does have a huge, you know, nuclear reactor laser beam in his mouth. So
kind of even the score, but
exactly. And, you know, he's in water, which is kind of his natural habitat. Kong drops into the water. He almost drowns to death. So, yeah. Yeah, it's one of those things, like I said, you've kind of got to acknowledge the fact that it's stupid that these two giant heavy things are just standing on the deck of an aircraft carrier like nothing, you know, like nobody's business. But it was fun, and it was funny. And
You say you got to turn off your brain. Yes, but you got to turn off your brain at the start of the movie, not because the writing is necessarily not great or anything like that. You are watching a giant ape take on a giant lizard that have superpowers. You know, basically, like, on, like, it, like, I get we're joking around that they both couldn't weigh and fit on the ship that they're on, but, like, that's the least of our worries when it comes to anything in this, like, you know, it's just like, oh, that's unbelievable, but, like, you gotta suspend your belief for the entire thing. You can't do it for just pieces of it. So, I get it, but, you know, it's one of those, you gotta turn your brain up. You're watching a Godzilla movie. Turn your brain off.
I knew what I was in for as soon as I just cheered that Kong used a, you know, U.S. military fighter jet like a dart. Just like, yep, that'll do.
Well, we already knew he could throw because he took a tree and turned it into a spear. So, like, we knew he'd be able to throw it accurately. In the woods is
whole habitat, yeah, exactly.
Yeah, like, he'd been training. Yeah.
So that was actually Chekhov's King Kong throw. They were establishing it. There's a lot of Chekhov's X in this movie, by the way. I've noted down several of them. Anything that comes up and doesn't seem like it's for a reason, it's going to become important later. You know,
of course.
The flask full of whiskey from the guy's dead wife, it's going to become important later. Just absolutely ridiculous. But yeah, I mean, speaking of lacks of logic, though, I just don't get how they've kind of made out this big thing about Godzilla doesn't want another alpha, you've got to have it, and then Godzilla just does off when they play dead, and I'm like, surely he would just finish him at this point. It's like, oh, that'll do.
That's his weakness. That's his kryptonite. That's his Martha, is that he can't tell when something else is dead if they're not, you know, he thinks that they're dead if they're not moving. So he is like a T-Rex. His vision's based on movement. So.
Okay, so after the second time I watched it, when they were like at the end, Gia could feel his heartbeat, so they detonate the ship over him to restart his heart. Yeah. Funny and great, convoluted, contrived, whatever. But I was like, oh, Godzilla left him because he had his foot on his chest and he felt his heart stop beating. Okay, he's dead. And that's why Godzilla left. So that's where my mind went.
Yeah. I mean, in that fight, yeah, but in terms of like when they're just like, oh, turn off everything on the, you know, the ship that they're on. We're playing dead. Kong's already knocked out, or he's down and sort of tired or whatever. And I'm like, but like in every other Godzilla fight in this universe and in every other, even when, you know, the whoever he's fighting, Ghidorah, Rodan or whatever, even when they're down and out, he would still, you know, do some final flourish and rip the head off or whatever. He wouldn't just be like, well, that's good enough. They're down. I'm like, well, they're really lucky that Godzilla was just like, that'll do. I'm a bit tired. I'm not going to bother finishing them. Three aircraft destroyers is my limit to completely wreck. You know, that one can go.
He's just like, you're so lucky this is just the end of the first act.
I mean, yeah, basically. Yeah, that's fair enough. I've just got a note here as well. I did appreciate the presence of the skull crawlers. As a nice, like, a nod back to Kong Skull Island, and that was what they were using as target practice, basically, for Mechagodzilla when you first introduced to him, which, again, happened earlier than I remembered in the film. I was like, huh, I thought it was a last act reveal, but nope, it's pretty, as soon as they get shot to Hong Kong, he's there.
Yep.
I should say, I think the, we've mentioned it already, but the copters carrying Kong in the little net thing is supposedly a reference to King Kong versus Godzilla and the carrying Kong into the fight using balloons thing that happens in that movie. If you've never seen it, brilliant. Gotta give it a go. Any last thoughts then on sort of the round one, as it were, before we move on?
No, not here.
Yeah. Nothing that wasn't said already.
Cool. Yeah, that's fair enough. I will say it. I do like the idea of Apex Cybernetics as like a rival to Monarch, but that's only because I've seen Monarch Legacy of Monsters. In this movie, I had no clue that there was anything. And then when I saw it happen in that show, again, without getting into spoilers, I was just like, oh, yeah, I remember. It's like a whole other thing, wasn't it? So, yeah. Appreciating that more in looking back, I guess, in retrospect.
Kong swinging from those bars through to the thing. Like, there's no way that that was set up for that. There's no way that that was gauged for his weight. And I mean, like, when I was watching it last night, I was like, okay, like, you know, I get it. It is. It's fun, like, having him swing, you know. Like, but it's just like, there's no way that they would hold. I was trying to look at the special effects for him to see if he damaged them on the way through. But, yeah, that was just like, okay, that's silly. Like, I understand why you did it, but it's silly.
Yeah. That's one of the many deleted scenes, was just one of them just, Kong just ripped it straight out of the roof of the tunnel and just fell flat on his face.
Yeah. He looks at the camera again, but this time like Jim from The Office. And
wah, wah. Yeah, exactly. We're not that far removed from it. But yeah, I mean, like, the Hollow Earth idea I never really loved, because maybe part of me was thinking like you, Michael. I was like, well, it's just set up for more movies, but it lapses into just silly fantasy in this weird way that I'm like, oh.
Yeah.
Should we have to? And like I said, the more's been done with it now that I think I'm way more on board with it. But when it first happened out of nowhere in this movie, I was like, ugh.
Now,
the lost fantasy land, whatever.
Now, to not get spoilers from Monarch, but we know from Monarch and just in general that there's a time discrepancy when you're there, which of course was not addressed in this movie. I'm wondering if they're going to do a, for the new movie, for Godzilla X, Kong, that there's going to be something like, oh, well, if we do this, it negates that.
Yeah.
You know,
they'll probably just say something like, oh, the time differential a few decades later just didn't it caught up, whatever.
Because like with them doing the TV show, which now canon, which, you know, took place after this movie, like it's gonna be interesting to see what they do, because they're obviously there in the new trailer, you know, like, but and they've set up from the TV show that, like, hey, like, time here doesn't move the same as time in our world. I'm really curious how they're going to do that, but that's, you know, another plot hole with the Hollow Earth with this. But, you know, we can have a power source there that we can download via scanning it, and it works as a power source.
That was the worst. That was such an obvious, stupid MacGuffin as well. It was just
It's the unobtainium of Godzilla world.
So, yeah, I mean, by this point, we're up to round two, which is the Hong Kong brawl. Kong, you know, Godzilla's magic atomic breath has tunneled a perfectly viable hole down all the way to Hollow Earth, where people can invert gravity and just jump out.
So it won't have any effects on our planet, having a giant hole that goes there. Nothing at all. It'll be fine.
Nah, it's all good.
It's going to revolutionize mining.
Couldn't get to earlier.
There you go. Yeah.
Exactly. Maybe that's what they'll do in the sequel. That'll be like, instead of all of this, it's going to be so difficult to get there. I'm going to need these, you know, this technology and this inverted gravity thing. And it's just like, nah, there's a big hole where in Hong Kong. Just jump down at you there. It's all good.
Just an elevator now.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah. So what did you guys think of this kind of synthwave Hong Kong battle? Dickie, I've got to come to you, because you sounded very hyped by this idea.
This was my favorite scene. What can you say? These things, that they just look gorgeous. And that's all I care about, really, when I'm watching these things. Mm. And this was just sex.
Yeah, the use of neon and everything was just such a cool, you know, obvious but nifty idea. And again, in terms of the actual fighting, if you care about those things, it was nice to see again Kong using his advantages. You know, he's more nimble than Godzilla. He can jump, he can attack him from above, etc. And then a cool moment when he just absorbs the atomic breath with the axe that he's now, you know, with Stormbreaker that he's established. Yeah. He's acquired from the Hollow Earth.
It is Stormbreaker.
So cool. Yeah.
Yeah, that was Dag's call earlier. Yeah.
There was some moments.
Yeah. I mean, it was cool, but then there was also other things that I was like, I'm on board with the actual fighting and everyone using their advantages and Godzilla clawing the crap out of Kong. And that scene when they're just roaring in each other's faces, I was like, that's just there for the trailer, really, isn't it? There's no reason for this display of, like, just...
I 100% when that happened again last night, I was like, kiss. Like,
that's the edit, like, somebody needs to give.
That's the edit that needs to do. Just like, they're fighting because they love each other. And
that makes me we re-edit the trailer.
It's now going to be when Godzilla and Mechagodzilla.
Yeah.
Oh boy.
Is we're getting the spin-off show, How I Met Your
Monster. How I Met Your Monster.
Oh, yeah. You got it. Yeah.
Well, there is, looks like in the trailer for the new one, there is, looks like a tiny Kong. Like, this is the story that he's telling him.
I've got it. I've got the definitive one. When Harry met Zilly.
I was thinking about that, too. Man. I was not when Harry.
You guys with the puns. These are great.
But yeah, so I mean, the confusing thing though, talking about this sort of next round of battle, is that they kind of have one of the characters. I think it's Skarsgård, but anytime he's on screen, it's just a black hole of, you know. Speaking of the adults from Peanuts, so it could have been him. It could have been anybody. Says, you know, round two goes to Kong, and I'm like, but it didn't, because then he got his ass completely kicked.
At like, that point, it did go to Kong. Then he got up and then lost the rest of it. So. Yeah. So yeah, I would say in Kong's defense, though, he was shot by a bunch of bullets by that bitch who died great in the Hollow Earth.
Oh yeah,
the daughter. Like,
oh yeah, he was wasting good actresses. Isaac Gonzalez.
He crushed her like a beer can.
Yeah. I loved the look on her face right beforehand too. That was the only time I'm like, yeah, take that, bitch. It's what went through my head. Because I mean, you're supposed to hate her. She's a bad person. So
yeah. Of course. I mean, it's. Yeah, there's no nuance or depth. It is just basically, I am the villain's bitchy daughter. And, I think I actually wrote the note when it comes to her death scene, that's why you don't F with Kong, bitch. Yeah. I do love the kind of little neat bit of subversion when Simmons, the Bashir character, is in the middle of his glorious villain speech and just immediately gets just murked from behind by Mechagodzilla mid-speech.
Yeah.
Yep. And then they made quite lampshaded by the whole. I wanted to hear the end of that speech.
Yeah, exactly.
But yeah, so that was kind of a cool moment. And obviously, at this point, he's killed Zerazawa, and because the dead brain of the alien monster has taken over or something.
Somehow, there's a brain there.
It's a titan. It's gonna survive.
It had died. There's no brain activity. Whatever.
We don't know that. That could be in those deleted scenes.
That's like it's like that big question that they do about like lawyership, where he's like, they're talking to the mortician. They're like, so can you tell me for certain that the victim was dead? It's like, yes. Well, how did you know that? Because his brain was in a jar on my desk.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, at this point I've kind of got round three is basically a little mini remake of Godzilla versus Mechagodzilla. Because they have their little rumble and you see the cool shot of atomic breath versus red laser, and the red laser overtakes and Godzilla's getting destroyed. Meanwhile, they're feeling Kong's heart slowing down, and as I said earlier, we got a lot of Chekhov things. So this was Chekhov's heave. Yes, that is what the Matrix ship's called, by the way, Michael. It's right, Hollow Earth aerial vehicle, or heave. Genius. So yeah, the fact that they'd already referenced as, oh, this thing has more power than enough power to light Vegas or whatever, and then say, oh, that's exactly the power level we need to make the defibrillator the giant monkey. Yeah, so yeah, Chekhov's heave was used. Funny callback to the kind of, the kid calling Skarsgård a coward. Okay, whatever. And then obviously it gets to be a tag team, and Gia convinces Kong Godzilla's not the enemy. He takes her on face value, despite Godzilla beating the shit out of him the entire movie. We established that the giant, terrifying robot that's, blasting the entire town with red lasers is the real villain. No shit. And then there's a traditional kind of, speaking of Avengers, that moment when, the team all has to come together. They fought each other, and now there's a bigger threat, and the common foe needs to come in. So, there's the Kong and Godzilla basically tag team against Mechagodzilla. Kong does the lethal weapon, popping his shoulder back in.
Oh, I'm so glad that I'm not the only one who saw that.
Yeah, like, for sure.
Oh, yeah.
Lethal Weapon. Yeah, they actually have Lethal Weapon 2 credited in the movie. If you didn't see it, Lethal Weapon 2 gets a call out in the credits.
Seriously? And
I, When I said earlier, like there are certain things in the credits that make me realize that were deleted scenes. Like there had to have been a moment before where somebody is watching Lethal Weapon 2, and it's that sequence where Riggs is popping his shoulder back in, and then that gets replayed later with Kong doing it, and then they cut that sequence because the producers are like, I don't care, and then they still have to credit it in the movie because they got permission to use the scene
for sure.
Yeah, so it's still credited, but it's not there.
I miss the scene where Kong in sign language tells Gia, I'm getting too old for this shit.
Obviously, Gia and Kong were watching Lethal Weapon together.
Yes.
Like they had a movie night. And
that was the primary movie that Gia used to teach him Kong sign language.
I appreciate the callback to the 2014 Godzilla, because Mechagodzilla is going to muto regular Recipe Godzilla with the laser beam down the gullet that we saw him do in the first of these movies. Like, okay, cool callback. And then obviously, you know, we've already established the axe and its ability, so Godzilla charges it up with his atomic breath. It's used to, you know, Anakin Skywalker the shit out of Mechagodzilla and then some, just dismember him. And then, you know, they get effectively that moment where they just nod to each other with mutual respect, whether it's, you know, the end of Jurassic World or a million other like, ah, the two things have now established. We apparently can have two alphas, never mind. And everybody, you know, smiles and has a happy time. And Gia goes off with King Kong back to Skull Island, and a cheesy song plays, and we don't establish where Godzilla is, but he's back to being the protector of humanity after they thought he wasn't. And yeah, I mean, this is there is plot here apparently, but yeah, that's
when you say protector of humanity, do you mean like of the millions of people that died in Hong Kong because he fought?
Well, that wasn't his fault. I mean,
wait a second.
Take it somewhere else where there aren't people.
Say what you will about the destruction that was rendered there. I need to know who the city planner and the electrician is for that city, because the power didn't fail once.
Nope. It's not Texas where there's just a snowstorm and then it all goes out. Like, it's a...
Ooh, wow. I was watching this with my husband, and he's like, how's the power staying on? And I'm like, oh, Godzilla is actually a Tesla coil. He's just wireless power transfer. It's fine. Everybody's Wi-Fi is at like 6 bars. They don't even know how they got 6 bars.
Even now, after seeing it so close, you know, so close to seeing it, apart from Kaylee Hottle and, you know, the severely underused Lance Reddick, it's just a bunch of people, you know, who are there, really. None of them really stand out for me. They're just... I'd be hard-placed to tell you any of the characters' names, if I'm being completely honest with you.
I've got them written down in front of me, and I still can't tell what they are.
Yeah, I same here. I've got the cast up in the screen in front of me, and I'm like, who are you people? they're there, but none of them make a big impression, really. It's perfunctory at best.
Yeah, I'm kind of with you. I think Kaylee Hottle is the best thing in this. I quite like Rebecca Hall, although she made clearly not that good of an impression, because I don't know what her character's name is. I call her by the actress.
That I think is on the movie, though, not necessarily the character. Fair. Like, if you don't say their name and you don't do, like, it's just like, I don't know. Like I looked at it too, and I was like, I don't remember them at any time saying Eileen.
Right. Oh, okay. Andrews. That's her name, is it?
Yeah. You see, you say Eileen Andrews is her name, is credited and everything like that, and my brain looking at IMDb immediately goes, no, that's not right. It was totally something else. But I'm looking at IMDb.
But here's the thing, though. I don't remember at any point them saying the name. Like, it's just like, you know, because other people were talking about Gia, you know, like, and stuff like that. Like, we knew that because there were characters having conversations about her, but nobody was like, oh, Eileen's working with Gia. Like, nobody said that. Like, or Dr. Andrews even is working with Gia. Like, nobody said that. For talking on acting, there's a character actor that I absolutely love who was in this. And I think he did a great job, knowing him and how opposite it is of him as a character actor and who he is as a person. Even though the character was awful, I don't think that's on his acting. I think that is on the writing and the directing. And that is Brian Tyree Henry, Bernie Hayes. I know you hated him, Michael, but like I love Brian Tyree Henry. I think he's a phenomenal actor. Him on the show Atlanta is fantastic as Paperboy. And that's where I was introduced. And he's been in a lot of other things, and he's fantastic. This was a caricature that he was doing that I'm 100% positive, as a film director myself and actor, like, that's a choice that was made for him. Like, I can't see that being all his idea. It was just like, or just like, hey, do something like this. And he's like this. And they're like, yeah, sure, do that. And he's like, all right, I'm 100% into this. I'm going to be a conspiracy theorist. You know,
it goes back to that old adage, isn't it? That like dying is easy and comedy's hard. And you can be the best dramatic actor in the world, and yet when you have to pitch an entirely comedic performance, you miss by a little bit, and it just comes off as, you know, human jar droppings.
True, but he's I don't consider him a dramatic actor either, though. I think he's funny in Atlanta. I've seen him in other things that I think he's very
funny.
He's
good in Bullet Train.
Oh, yeah, he's great in Bullet Train.
I loved him as Fastos in Eternals, and Eternals gets a lot of
credit. Yes. Yeah, it does. But
he was in that movie.
Yeah, he is. But like, I thought, like, to me, this felt like choices were, just like with some other things in this movie, choices were made kind of for him, and he was just doing with what he could with what he had. And, you know, good writing will overcome some of that sometimes. This, we know, wasn't great writing. So
I feel similarly about Demian Bashir, because I've seen him in, like, Tarantino films and other things where he's really good. And him as a villain could be fantastic, but like you said, he's written with nothing except you want to get the MacGuffin, and then we'll be immediately murked.
Yes, exactly. Also, the other actor, I'm trying to find him on here on IMDb, the one that was with Millie Bobby Brown and Byron Tyree Henry, I believe.
Julian Dennison.
He was the bad guy at Deadpool 2, right?
Yeah,
he's been in a few things. He's been
and
in,
he's
great in Deadpool 2. Like, he's phenomenal.
Seen Hunt for the Wilder People, highly advised, because he's in that too, and it is so
Julian
good.
Dennison, yeah.
Yeah.
There he is. Yeah. Now, he's great. Yeah, like, those three people on paper, you would think, oh, this is going to be really good, you know, between all three of them, and it wasn't. And to me, that's going to come down to bad writing. Like,
because
you've got people
actors.
Who
I mean, even Millie Bobby Brown is, we know from Stranger Things and whatever else, is a very capable, very good actress.
Oh, the Sherlock, Enola Holmes, she's fantastic. She's got good comedic timing. Yeah. She's great, but that's where actors like only can do with what they're given, and sometimes it's just a paycheck. And that's why, like, there was enough good actors who I know are funny and stuff like that who didn't do well in this. To me, that's going to come down to the writing what it comes down to. Because, you know, we said this is a popcorn movie, writing secondary. But if you want things to, one of the reasons why some of the Marvel movies work really well with comedy is because they're written well. Even if they have some plot holes, they're still, the dialogue's written well, and I don't think it was this. Like we said, we could replace it with the Charlie Brown adults. Yeah. It's very true, because the dialogue was shit for the most of this movie.
Yeah, it just felt... I think, writing, but also to a certain extent, maybe directing in terms of...
A little
bit,
but...
Not being an actor. Director and kind of,
the director was.
I mean, you're there to be effects.
Yeah. Well, the director was there to. He was only giving his two stars any time and wasn't tagging to his understars. So he was only talking to Kong and Godzilla the entire time for performance notes.
Well, this is the thing. I mean, when it's a technical kind of thing that you have to do, and fair play to them. I mean, Godzilla and Kong look stunning in the movie.
They
you know, they're very well rendered and whatever else. And so when you've got that special effects to do, maybe there just wasn't the time to focus on being there for an actor. But so we're talking about. The next section would have been directing. And so does anybody have any kind of thoughts on the direction that stood out or anything they wanted to bring up?
There was a director.
Apparently it was
somebody
Adam
in
Wingard.
Charge. He was the manager of the movie.
No, someone was outside of the world playing this on a Rampage machine.
Yeah.
I've seen his previous movie. Was it Lights Out? He did the horror movie, but he might be good for all I know. I mean, this was a good... In terms of it did what it was expected to, the effects were up to par. and it looked, I mean, visually, I think there's some gorgeous stuff in here.
Oh, yeah.
There's things that could be, you know, they're probably taken straight from concept art, but there's things that could be like paintings, like the shot of Kong in the rain on the deck of the boat, and then him and Gia kind of touching hand to finger and everything. It's like, those are stunning visuals. You know, don't necessarily belong in a movie that's as cheesy as this at times, but I'm like, you know, it looks stunning. And as you said, even the, you know, synthwave album cover fight, there's visually a lot going on there, and it's a cool idea. So I think, like I said, as much as I might criticize the director in terms of being there for acting performances, in terms of visuals and special effects and things, you've got to kind of give it up to
Here's the one thing, though. It also depends on who the director of photography was and how much leeway he had. Like, that's what I'm trying to look up, who was the director of photography right now. Because, like, I've worked with some before that, like, I give carte blanche to do whatever you want. You know, it's this style of movie. Have fun. And then other times I've been very much like, I want this shot, I want this shot, I want this shot. So, like, you know, it really depends.
And cinematography and everything as well. I mean, the color palette that's used throughout it, I think, is gorgeous. It's always very of a, you know, of a type. It's, everything seems to fit into that point in the movie. And yeah, I just think it looks, and what, like I said, I was impressed by things like King Kong is difficult to do in CGI, like the moving fur and the fur getting wet and stuff. And I couldn't really fault it, even though I know how difficult technically that is to do. So, yeah.
I'm going to tie in something real fast. So the director of photography was named Ben Saracen, and he's done some other big, like, global movies. Like, he did World War Z. But he also directed, I'm going to tie back in, he did Transformers Revenge of the Fallen.
Oh, no.
Hey, the Transformer movies look good. He also did the 2017, the Tom Cruise Mummy, and starting in that Monsterverse that they never did.
What? Oops.
This guy's resume is just atrocious.
No, here's the thing, though. But here's the thing. You're taking in the type of movie with the way the movie looks. Those are two totally different things. Mm. I'm only talking how the movie looked. But yeah, no, he's got a pretty solid, he's got a decent resume with some of the stuff on here.
Movie definitely looked epic.
Yes.
Anytime there's a monster on screen, it's really drawn back. The sense of scale is very appropriate. The destruction is just like at the forefront of everybody's minds. They're like, oh, how are those people? Yeah, oh, look how cool that move is. You know?
Yeah, of course.
When Mechagodzilla blows his way out of that mountainside, it is wildly cool to see that.
Yeah. Well, DK, you did mention you on the music and sound just behind the scenes of that. So did you want to drop that for us now?
Yeah, it was Tom Holkenborg. In June 2020, Tom Holkenborg was announced as the film's composer. Wingard met with Holkenborg in 2018, where the latter admitted to recreationally writing music for Godzilla years prior due to being a fan. He subsequently began communicating with the director, tweaking the material and played it, stating that Wingard was totally in love with the arrangements. Holkenborg requested a bass drum roughly 10 feet in diameter, but the builder was only able to scale it down to 8 feet. And Wingard, he wished to go in a different direction to create themes that were unique to the Monster versus Godzilla while paying homage to its influences. Holkenborg wanted to create a Godzilla theme that lived and breathed the history behind monster themes. Lower brass and big timpanis were used to emphasize the power of Godzilla. He wanted Godzilla's theme to be slow and sluggish to reflect Godzilla.
Yeah, it's fair enough. I can't say any of it particularly I found all that memorable. Maybe it's a good thing that it didn't stand out. But
Do you know what movie Holkenborg did before Godzilla vs. Kong?
Go on then.
Zack Snyder's Justice League.
Oh, God.
When the credits roll, the song that plays is so completely out of touch with what
All
just
I need is the air
movie.
That I breathe. Though,
yeah.
Yeah.
It was last minute collection there.
There was a similar one when we were introduced at the start of the movie to Kong and Gia. I can't remember what it was, but it was a similar really cheesy song, because those were the only things that really stood out for me. It's like these 70s soft pop rock.
Yeah. He's trying to pull He's trying to pull a James Gunn. It's not working.
No.
Yeah, no. It's really not. Not until he chucks in, you know, come on, Eileen.
He works with Zack Snyder too much. That's the problem.
I was going to say, what else can you expect from a movie where Superman and Batman get together to defeat Superman's previous enemy from the last movie? Sound familiar?
Yeah, I mean, you say that, though, but I mean, JXL has done some memorable stuff. I mean, his Wonder Woman theme is iconic and brilliant. And yet, like I said, there's nothing memorable in a movie which should, you know, it should have a Godzilla theme and a Kong theme, and I just can't remember any of it at all. Well, I'm going to jump into the audience response then before we do favorite character and then our conclusions, etc. So I did ask around the internet what people thought about Godzilla versus Kong. Didn't get a huge response, but we do have some things for me to read out here. A lot of them come from, well, this first bunch all come from a couple of Facebook groups, Toho Kaiju Posting and the Ultimate Godzilla Fan Club. And from there, Brian DiCarlo just says 2 out of 5 and doesn't elaborate. Roger Saunders says 5 stars, I liked it. Rafael Fernandez just says 4. Fred Evan Bishop says 4. This movie was released towards the end of the pandemic and helped save the movie theater industry. The fights and action felt fairly predictable, and I wish it wasn't campy for the sake that the original film was campy, but it was a good enough blend of sci-fi action and acting. Just wish there was more to the story and world building. Kyle Peffers says 3. It was a fun movie, but King of the Monsters was better, in my opinion. William Arras McKellar IV also says 3. Fun ride. You could tell every spot where the direction of the film changed due to the changing circumstances around the Godzilla license, which I didn't know anything about, to be honest. Honestly, it's the second weakest of the series so far by way of plot and story, but it's right up there with Kong's and King of the Monsters by way of visual spectacle. Chris Plant just says 2, unfortunately. David M. Proust says 3.5 stars, I'd say. I mean, it's not the best of the MonsterVerse. The 2 previous films were better, but it's actually better than a lot of Godzilla movies and certainly the last great Godzilla movie so far. Obviously, hasn't seen -1. It made some mistakes, but ultimately it's very entertaining and satisfying. Not in my top 10, but certainly not in my bottom 10 either. Nero Skellington says 1 star, good fights, bad movie. Like, if the only thing that doesn't disappoint is the fights, I would just see them as YouTube videos. Okay. Sean McKinley says 4 stars, a good movie, but I wish it had better music, weirdly enough. So there you go. Marcos Garza says 3.5 stars, just good, dumb fun. Joe T. Bolt says 4 stars, fun with more than a bit of Showa flavor. And I think Justin Tao says it won't be going into my top 10 greatest films ever, but it's a fun action adventure movie. Really dumb, but finally delivering on the previous promises of monster battles. Sean Ray says 2 stars. It was such a letdown for me compared to King of the Monsters and Skull Island. Just a dumb movie with undercooked ideas and a rushed plot. The acting was decent, and while I'm not crazy on the design, I thought Mecha G had a fun fight. Still, this movie put a damper on my love for the MonsterVerse, especially since it seems that's the direction that they're taking the series. Over on, let's see, my personal Facebook, our good friend George White from the PhD Sheep Nerd Bible Podcast says 5 stars, pure cinema. I live for the 4DX turn your brain off and enjoy it movies. The MonsterVerse delivers every time. It's just a shame we need human characters that are so bland. You can bet I'm front and center for Godzilla X Kong, the new empire. And I did get some responses on Letterboxd. Michael Stark gave the film 2.5 stars and says, cool monster fights, dull human, .. everything. Abby Friel gave it 3.5 stars and just says, lizard fought monkey and I am happy. someone just called Danny, no other information here, gave it 3 stars and says, this was a lot better than I expected it to be. Was a big Godzilla fan as a kid and this was very satisfying, although I don't like that they changed Godzilla's mother's name to Martha in this.
Vindication.
Yeah, and that's exactly. That's all I have for the audience's response to this movie. So a bit of a mixed bag, to say the least. So yeah, we're going to do what we normally do, which is to go around and ask everyone their favorite character, moment, and line from the movie. Let's see. Michael, are you able to go first? Who's your favorite character, first of all, from the movie?
I think G is my favorite character. It's the only one that's well thought out and done correctly. And I thought the actor did fantastic at that part. Favorite line?
Oh no, we'll come back. We'll come back to you for the other. Okay, okay. Round at a time. So yeah, Dag, what about you? Who's your favorite character in the film?
I mean, at risk of just being like, yeah, Gia. Let's all say Gia. I really liked Bernie.
Okay, wow. and we were doing so well.
I heard people being like, yeah, I hated Bernie. But I mean, the guy was your typical run-of-the-mill conspiracy paranoid guy, and he played him with conviction, and he didn't like drop beat. He was that guy all the way through the movie, which was great.
Sure. All right. Bernie, also, what about you then?
Chekhov's Blast. Who's
your favorite? exactly. Yeah.
Monster, Kong, character, human, Gia.
Okay, I just literally went with Kong. I think there's more characterization in that CGI monkey than any of the human characters. I probably should have thought of Gia, but no, I really like Kong, and I think it probably is his relationship with Gia. Particular. So it kind of
the
is
only heart in the,
similarly
it's the only heart in the movie.
Yeah.
It is. Yeah, exactly. It is. It's the only thing with real kind of presence and stakes, I think. So,
yep.
So do you have a favorite kind of moment or scene in the movie then, Michael?
I think the aircraft carriers between Kong and Gia and the rain like that, I think it was so pretty. It was one of the only scenes with heart. It's like, I think that was it. I can't think of any dialogue that would, the only dialogue that I can think of is the stuff that was driving me crazy, which isn't good dialogue. So, or lack of dialogue. So.
Fair enough. And what about you, Doug?
The only dialogue that really struck a chord with me was near the end when Kong gets his nuclear defibrillation and wakes up, and Gia is standing there and she's crying and she's like, Godzilla is not the enemy, that's the enemy. Ooh. And I was like, okay, little girl, you've got me, I'm all for this. I'll go fight Godzilla for you.
So that was your favorite scene. That makes sense. That's fair enough. That's cool.
Yeah.
What about you, DK?
Let's be honest, this isn't great for dialogue. So I'm just going to go with one that you're going to expect from me, which is...
I'm not asking for favourite line, I'm asking for favourite scene.
Oh, okay. I'll go with the synthwave fight then.
Yeah.
Okay, fair enough.
That is good.
I personally went with the final Mechagodzilla fight, but I think it's actually too short. I could have watched more of that. And yeah. I again, looking up Mechagodzilla's stats on the internet, he's got so many cool weapons and little things that you barely see or don't see all deployed, and I want to see it all, dang it. Because I've said it before, I'm a huge Power Rangers fan, and if there's one thing I love more than watching two monsters fight, it's watching monsters fight giant robots. So, you know, I want more. Anyway, now we're up to everyone's favorite line from the movie, if you can think of one. Michael, anything spring to mind?
No.
Fair enough. I can just
looks between Godzilla or between Kong and Gia, you know, and then the little bit of sign language, but I couldn't remember anything specific. I do like that line that Dag was saying about that right after he's defibrillated.
Fair enough. Cool. So Dag, are you gonna go with that as your favorite line as well?
Sure. So many of them are so memorable, you know. I do like what Bernie says after kinda. The kid takes the flasks and fries the computer, and he's like, "No,
I gotta die here with you and sober."
Cool. DK, go on then. It's time now for your favorite one.
Dax just used it, so.
Oh well, there you go. He stole it from you. My favorite line was, "I spent 10 years on that island studying him. I know this for sure."
Kong bows to no one.
That is a quotable line.
That was hair on the back of your neck stick up moment. Plus King Kong's cool. Well, I do love Godzilla too, but you know, in a roundup fight, I'm rooting for the monkey. Anyway. So all that remains then is for us to give our conclusions and our score out of 5 stars. Just notice how long my conclusion is. Michael, we'll come to you. Why not? We've been doing it all episodes. So
first of all,
a conclusion to kind of round up and score out of 5 stars, please.
I think this is a very fun movie. I like what they tried to do. Like it could have been way better, as we see from Godzilla Minus One. If you do it right and good writing, you can make it a brilliant fucking Godzilla movie. But ultimately, at the end of the day, you're getting exactly what you thought you were getting. You're getting a fun popcorn movie with badass fights and an entertaining however long the movie is. So I think I'd give it 3.5 stars out of 5.
Okay, cool. Fair enough. Dag, you're up next then. Conclusion and a score out of
I think I'm agreeing with Michael there. It is absolutely entertaining. It allows you to turn your brain off, ignore all the weirdness with the plot that we've pointed out, and just sit back and enjoy a monster movie. It doesn't require a lot of thought. We shouldn't give it a lot of thought. Obviously, the editor realized that when they cut out all the dialogue that was good. you want to pay attention to Kong and Godzilla and Mechagodzilla, and you just need a threadbare plot line to make everything make the minimum amount of sense. So for me, it's a 4 out of 5.
Okay, cool. DK, you're next.
It's a Godzilla film with Kong. So, yeah, how do you think I'm going to react to this? Seriously, it's not perfect. The human characters, for the most part, are just meh. But I watched it twice in the space of 2 days, and it's not often I can say that about a movie. So, technical quibbles aside, it's still a Godzilla movie with Kong. And I'm going to give it 3.5 out of 5.
Okay, cool. Well, apologies in advance, as I said, I didn't realize how long my conclusion is, but I'm here, so I'm going to read it. I said it's a serviceable monster movie. There's some really awesome stuff, cool visuals and interesting ideas, but a whole lot of nonsense and occasional boredom too. I'd heard so much criticism of the human characters in the film that I dismissed it as cliche, but honestly, they really are that bad. Only Rebecca Hall and Kaylee Hottle come out with a passing grade for the acting, with the rest outperformed by CGI monsters. Speaking of which, they are naturally the heart of the film. You can't really go wrong with the basic premise of these two apex beasts fighting for top dog of the Titan world. So it's a little baffling to me that they bothered to add much more. The majority of the frankly unnecessary plot is B-movie sci-fi gubbins and silliness, with the Bernie Madison side quest almost immediately getting tiresome. The last act, though, gives us something awesome that's realized extremely well, but easily had enough potential to have been its own movie, as it has been a few times, Godzilla v. Mechagodzilla, rather than just the best and most memorable part of this one. The actual fights are truly spectacular, but I couldn't help but feel they would have been infinitely better served on the big screen, so it's gutting we'll probably never get that chance. There are logic problems in places that make no sense, and at least one returning actor who has no point whatsoever being paid to come back. I honestly enjoyed the previous two films more, and there are superior films with the two title monsters. But with all that said, I would emphasize again that there's some beautiful visual direction, and the fights themselves, and there are a fair few, are plenty breathtaking. I do take issue with the promise that the director made that there'd be a definitive winner, as I still don't think that's the case. Anyhow, the film just about scrapes a pass for the CGI, the action, and some neat threading of ongoing monsterverse plots. In fact, I'll even give it extra kudos for just good frequently looks. As an overall film, though, it was good, enjoyable, but I feel like it could and should have been more. And I also gave it 3.5 out of 5, believe it or not. So, yeah, we add those together and we share it by the number of us here. Gives you a final score, Godzilla vs. Kong, of 3.6 out of 5. So, yeah, I think we kind of realized it was going to be around that when three of us gave the same score. So, can't see it's a surprise, or we can't really say it's unfair. Or, yeah, I think that's quite representative as best it could be. So, yeah, that's that wraps things up on this first part of our monster crossover. And just remains for me to say, you know, hopefully we're all going to enjoy Godzilla X Kong. And, you know, you can look around on social media to find our reactions. Once I've seen that, I'm sure it'll be on my Letterboxd. And yeah, so I just want to thank everyone for listening if you've made it this far. And most of all, thank our guests for taking part with us. So first of all, Michael, thank you so much for coming back to us.
Thanks for having me. I have a blast doing these.
Awesome. Yeah, it's been fun. It's been a really good one. So I've enjoyed myself, and hopefully we'll have you back again soon. Cool. And Dag, again, thanks for coming back. Well, I see you back for your first film podcast. Have you enjoyed yourself?
Oh, yeah. I want to do more of these.
Awesome. Well, we'll definitely have to have you back on as well, then. That will happen. Don't say things you don't mean, because we'll take you up on it. So awesome. And DK, anything you wanted to say? I know it's pointless asking where people can find you on the internet, because the answer is nowhere.
I don't do social. They can find me on that I for Investigate Shambler from the Stars broadcast, and if they love kaiju movies, join us in a couple of months on Cult Classics, where we'll be looking at War of the Gargantuas.
Oh, very nice. And as I said, stay tuned for the other two monster crossover things, which are going to be Gojira and King Kong. So if you're a fan, that's to look forward to. Hopefully you'll have something on screen telling you everything, everywhere that you can find us on the internet. I don't want to keep going over it, but just in case you are listening instead of watching, we are basically on YouTube, a Silver Screen Podcast, on Spotify, where you get audio as Silver Screen Podcast / Hit or Miss Star Trek Podcast. We're just Silver Screen Podcast on Facebook groups, Silver Screen Podcast on Instagram, Mastodon. I'm Michael K. Wilson, michael.k.wilson on Threads, because that's all I've got. And, you know, we're at Trek Screen Pods on Elon Musk's personal side project, whilst it's still around, with a capital T-S-N-P. So, yeah, you can find us all around, basically, on the internet. So, yeah, our next episode will be a cult classic where myself, DK, and Toby, who you may recognize from other mainly superhero stuff, will be branching out a little bit, and we're going to be looking at one of the most famous animes of all time. So, look forward to that. And, yeah, DK, do you want to sign us off with the usual goodbye, then?
We'll be back.
I'll be back.
You've been listening to the Silver Scream Podcast, hosted by Michael Wilson and DK. Produced and edited by Mike Wilson. Additional material and behind-the-scenes sections by DK. Follow us on social media. Links to all of our social media pages can be found via the Linktree page listed in the episode's description. This podcast is part of the Mike's Podcast Network. You can listen to this and our sister podcasts on all good podcast providers by searching for Silver Screen Podcast or Mike's Podcasts. Don't forget to like, subscribe, and share far and wide. Thank you for joining us. Come back next time for more movie magic, and hopefully this can be the beginning of a beautiful friendship.